Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to the Grievance Room, everybody. I'm Taylor Jedrzak, and I definitely don't have any embarrassing Vegas stories to share today. With me, as always, is Ethan Fornes, who has been to Vegas and may have some stories he'd rather keep to himself. How are you doing today?
Engaged there, not married. No chapels for me.
Probably for the best. In today's episode, which can be heard as a part of the Waiting for Next Year and Evergreen Podcast Networks, we welcome in fellow WFNY contributor and resident draft expert, Joe Gilbert. How you doing today, Joe?
Good, guys. How are you? Doing well and getting through the draft. This weekend was kind of fun, so kind of rehabbing after that.
You were a busy man.
It was a busy weekend for the Browns. 9 picks.
Yeah, how does it feel to kind of, you know, all that work you put into it, now it's over and you get to kind of detox for a couple weeks?
It's nice. It's kind of like, it's sort of like Christmas almost. Kind of like a day after Christmas, kind of get up, just kind of relax and settle on out there. But yeah, it was fun 3 days, and kind of weird seeing the Browns not be in the first day, but it was fun weekend.
Yeah. I mean, it was certainly an interesting draft.
Yeah.
Not short for any interesting stories. So, as we get into the show here, like we did last time, and as we're going to do every time going forward, the guest has to lead with his own grievance. You gotta pay your dues, per se. What do you got for us?
Well, mine is surrounding the draft. It's the it's just the Baker Mayfield kind of conversation that I consistently had to hear over the last 3 days on NFL Network, ESPN, just how the Browns screwed up this whole situation, even though they got a franchise quarterback out of it, and Baker is still on the team, and they're kind of swaying the Browns like they're holding him hostage, like a hostage is making $18 million, which is certainly an interesting way to think about it. But
you can hold me hostage for $18 million.
Right. I know. I think we would all do that.
I mean, to be fair, if anyone wanted him, he wouldn't still be
right. Right. So. Yeah. That's the thing that I keep coming back to. Like, what do you want us to do? If no one wants to, we're not going to just cut bait and have to pay $18 million for nothing. They're going to keep on trying to trade him. It was just annoying. They just kept repeating the same thing and kind of the same old story on it. But yeah, that's my grievance for this weekend.
It's certainly kind of a weird discourse, because, you know, they tried to do everything they could to get him out and get him to a good place, but
yeah.
None of those places want him. I mean,
right.
The Seahawks still don't have anyone. They didn't draft anyone. The Panthers traded up for Matt Corral, who, as a part-time Panthers fan, I'm not really I'm not sold on him, but I'm not totally against it. Like, I would have been them overdrafting Kenny Pickett at 6.
Right.
But yeah, it's a situation where I don't think either side has really played its cards right. I think some of the stuff that leaked out from the Browns early on about him being a problem and wanting an adult, which calling Deshaun Watson as an adult, debatable.
Right.
I don't know if we want to go down that rabbit hole today. Yeah. Ethan might.
I'm purposely going to hold myself back from that, but it does kind of speak volumes that the Panthers would rather punish themselves with Matt Corral, who is arguably not that good, that the Texans would rather run with Davis Mills than take Baker Mayfield back in exchange for Deshaun Watson, and that the Seahawks gave, I think, $7 million to Geno Smith to come back and compete with.
Right.
Who's the quarterback they got?
Drew Lock.
Yeah, to compete with Drew Lock for the starting job. I mean, I get that it's $18.1 million, but for three of those teams being hard rebuilders, you could eat that for a year.
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's only a year of $18 million. Obviously, I think the Browns are willing to pay some of it, but, like, it's a clear sign that it's not the Browns or anything like that. It's that teams just aren't interested right now. And that's why I think the Browns are actually smart, just kind of letting it go, because things happen closer to training camp. You have all these practices during the summer, and if the Seattle Seahawks figure out that Drew Lock is crappy,
bad,
Geno Smith is crappy, that you're gonna come back to the table. And I think that's what the Browns are kind of hoping for.
Yeah, I mean, you don't hope for injuries, but, you know, they're kind of inevitable. And
right.
I think that's another thing that the Browns are kind of waiting for at this point, because you're not gonna keep him on the roster. I don't think there'd be a situation where he's in the same kind of "we'll pay you to go away" that Deshaun Watson was in last year. So,
it's
a weird one for sure.
It is. Yeah, it's just the way they were just talking about it, like the draft was like the deadline. Like, it's not the deadline. There's clearly, and then they kept bringing up that, oh, maybe they'll try to have him play this year as like the backup. Like, that's not happening. We all know that's not happening.
That bridge was not burned. It was nuked and vaporized.
Right.
As the resident baseball guy, deadlines don't matter.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. speaking of Ethan and his many grievances, what do you got for us this week?
I'm going to keep it relatively tame this week, and this is more so just an observation in my lifetime of Browns fandom. And I understand that this was a weaker draft class all around. There was no consensus, this guy's a can't-miss type prospect. But at the same time, when you're the Browns and your first pick is at 44, why do you always incessantly trade down later in the draft? And me, who has probably the lowest significantly by far football IQ in this trio right now, when I can look at the roster and say, oh, 44, there's a ton of great receivers on the board, but you trade back 20 picks and take a cornerback. This is something that I've always noticed as a Browns fan, and it's always driven me insane, where it's just like, yeah, maybe these drafts aren't the strongest, but to get better, you kind of want to take the best available guy that's going to help you. And I don't know anything about this cornerback, but just some of the names that you missed out on. John Mechie, Alabama wide receiver, got taken in the pick that you traded. You missed out on David Ojabo. Tyquan Thornton, I'm not even going to say that I know who that is from the Patriots took. But George Pickens went to your rival in the Steelers, and I'm going to hate if that pans out. Sky Moore got taken.
Sky Moore was taken before 44.
Sky Moore was taken at 54. Reading all these between our pick, the Browns, and the pick that they traded. So, you know, for a guy who didn't necessarily think this was the best draft class, but obviously knew the limitations and the weaknesses of this roster before re-signing potentially Jadeveon Clowney, it just seems like a terrible idea.
Yeah.
I mean, I can definitely see that. It's for someone who, I mean, even I, when we got down to like near 70, where we actually made our first pick, I was like, I'm starting to run out of guys that I recognize.
Yeah.
and I think that's definitely where you were around 55.
And, well, that's the thing though. Like, I live in Columbus, and this town is Ohio State Buckeyes 24/7, 365. So like, I knew a ton of these names, as the guys in the Columbus radio scene are always talking about Ohio State's biggest competition nationwide. And I'm not an Ohio State fan, but I will say listening to it kind of keeps me in the college football loop. So like, I knew a lot of the guys that went up into the fourth round, but again, none of them were like can't miss guys to me. Like when Andrew Berry says he had a first round grade on guys into the sixth, I believe it in this draft because everybody's kind of mid.
Yeah. Yeah. It was an interesting decision. I understood it because they got a quite a good haul in terms of just the trade value chart and all that. But yeah, I definitely understand. Like if you look at the guys you have, you don't really have a guy you know that'll be right in, you can put in the lineup right away and be an immediate impact. And for a lineup that's, or for a roster that's actually looking to compete for a Super Bowl right now, I actually agree that you kind of wanted that for 44 because there's that Sky Moore, as you were saying, George Pickens, who I was high on. That was there for the taking, and you could.
Oh, probably put him in the line right there.
I know. I turned that around. I caught myself on that one. But yeah, it just none of our guys the draft picks just seem like they're going to be able to go right away and be an immediate impact guy. And we've seen over the past few drafts, second round guys can do that. And it was an interesting decision, but I understand because knowing Andrew Berry is always about value and all that. And the trade was pretty lopsided in terms of that, but in what the Browns needed, I definitely can see why we should have just stayed there.
So piggybacking off of that, you hit on it, and that's value. And the only pick that I really loved in this draft was David Bell at 99. So that was the big possession receiver the Browns went after to be Amari Cooper's counterpart and somebody to take the pressure off of him. But at the same time, like the rest of the draft doesn't make the most sense in the world to me. I like the kicker. Obviously, that's been a frustrating point. And I know you were high on Cade York, but we'll get to him. But, you know, taking Cincinnati's Mike Ford late in the draft when you already have Demetri Felton, D'Ernest Johnson, Kareem Hunt, Nick Chubb, et cetera, right. Didn't make a ton of sense to me either. And, you know, it was just a weird year.
Yeah, it was. It's obviously hard because you're picking so late in the draft. And in those situations, you're not really picking for need. But because the Browns didn't have any higher up picks that you sort of needed to a little bit. They did go heavy on the defensive line, which they very much needed. The edge rushers, we don't have Jadeveon Clowney signed yet, and the interior is just a who's who of just random names right now. So it'll be I thought they did well on their defensive line, but yeah, it's just hard when you don't have a high pick and you trade away your second highest pick to move back, and it's kind of hard to go for need when it's just a high variance of people that are left on the board, and you kind of have to just stay to your best player available. So I can see why, but it's what the Browns are going to be situated in for the next couple of drafts.
Suppose that's fair.
That's actually good, kind of a good point to jump into my grievance at. It's a rather light hitting grievance, but it was certainly a brand new experience to watch what was potentially the wildest first round of my life and know that the Browns had no impact in it whatsoever. Yeah. So I think it's going to be really weird going forward in the next 2 years that the Browns don't have that kind of ammunition in the first round to go up and get someone that has that game-changing ability. And, you know, that's the cost of Deshaun Watson, whether or not you value what he is at three first round picks. I mean, I guess that depends on where you are for his football playing and for his moral standing. But, you know, if the football standing part works out, then I think more and more people will unfortunately kind of forget about the moral part of it. So it's going to be kind of interesting going forward, not having the Browns be a part of early drafts and get to kind of be a part of that fun. But I guess with that out of the way, what is Joe? What are kind of your impressions of the draft, of the class that the Browns brought in?
Yeah, I overall like the guys that they got. Obviously, the first one was kind of the head scratcher. It made a little bit more sense once you heard about the Troy Hill trade, but it's still, I thought there was a lot of other guys that I liked on the board that was a little bit better at that point. But if you kind of like just go past that pick, I really like the rest of the draft. I love that they got a kicker. We've been struggling with kickers ever since Phil Dawson who left,
he works out a little better than the last kicker we
drafted. Right. Yeah. Yeah. It just seems like teams are getting a little bit better over the past few years of kind of drafting kickers. You had last year Evan McPherson. And you just saw the impact of what he could do for that
stud.
Stud, yeah. This whole division has just studs at kicker. So it was a smart move trying to just kind of solve that for finally solving it. And it's a crapshoot. But I just thought he was a good selection. And then I thought that what they did on the defense line was very good. Perrion Winfrey, I thought was a steal. He was in my top 50. And they got him in the fourth round, beginning of the fourth round. So I thought he was their best pick of the draft. And I think he could be an immediate impact guy, just as a rotational guy, because they don't really seem to covet interior defense alignment. So it might be that they just kind of do a rotation type situation. So I think he could definitely get in there and kind of help out this year. And then just the rest of the draft, I could see – I know you were talking about the running back earlier. I could see their thinking on that because both Dearness Johnson and Kareem Hunt are on one-year contracts. So after this year, we might be happy to look at running back. So getting a little jump on that kind of makes sense. Right now, it just seems like a loaded group, but we'll see on that. And then
there's also no guarantee that Dearness Johnson's going to be on the roster
right at
the beginning of the season.
Yeah, because I don't think he technically has signed.
No, I don't think he has.
Yeah,
I think
exclusive rights or whatever it was.
So
that's still up in the air, and I could definitely see someone getting traded in there. And then the David Bell, I just as an Ohio State fan over the past couple of years, so he's just been a killer in the Big Ten, and getting a guy productive like that, it actually seems like a kind of opposite of Schwartz from last year, like type of players. Like Schwartz was just a super athletic guy, great speed, all that, but didn't really have the production. And then Bell, on the other hand, is super productive, but just didn't quite have the speed or athleticism that would have probably earned him a higher pick. So I thought that was a good selection, and maybe he can work his way onto the field. But yeah, overall, yeah, I thought it was all right given what they had. they're dealing with a little tough hand given the trade and all that. So given what their draft capital was, I thought they did pretty well out of there.
Do you as far as Bell goes, do you think that he was really good value at that point, given his production in college?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty where they thought they were going to go, third round, maybe a little bit earlier in the third round, but yeah, I thought it was a good spot for him. That athleticism is just a thing that kind of just cuts him down a little bit. Mm-hmm. But that production is probably one of the best in the whole entire draft.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to ignore it.
Right, it's a three year high production, which is
not
you don't see that very often, especially at wide receiver.
Not just high production, but stepping up in the biggest games too. It feels like against every ranked opponent, and somebody had pulled the stats that he had absolutely crushed every ranked opponent he faced. But that's the kind of thing you look for. But do you think putting him in the slot across from Mari and just him catching balls across the middle while Mari's the deep threat, do you think that has any type of future success with potentially Deshaun Watson and or Jacoby Brissett at quarterback?
Yeah, I could definitely see that because Bell, I think, is a guy you want to kind of give him kind of off coverage kind of situations. So in the slot would be a little bit better for him. Working across the field, he's very good at catching, which is a good thing for the Browns receivers based on what we've had. Just getting
should be a prerequisite.
Right, you would think, yes. But yeah,
it's calling Braylon Edwards. Braylon Edwards.
Braylon Edwards.
The Greg Little days.
It just seems like everybody that when they come here, they just cannot catch. it's a weird trait that happens.
I don't know. Dwayne Bowe caught some hands from some fans, but that's about it.
That's true. That's very true. But yeah, it's I think he could be a nice little match in the slot because he's a physical guy. He's bigger than his size kind of shows, and he's a very good hands catcher and. He showed over his college career that he can make contested catches very well. You can just watch the Notre Dame game last year. He made that great diving, almost like an OBJ catch in college. So, yeah, I think he'll be a good slot guy.
Yeah, and that's something that the Browns have like pretty sorely missed the last couple of years with Jarvis being in and out of being hurt and always having leg injuries and not being able to create the separation and. Baker seemingly not being able to find guys over the middle because he either double clutched or couldn't see them. That's been a kind of a part of the game that's been missing. So if they can find that aspect of it, I think it opens up their offense just a little more because it backs linebackers off.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely, and it's something that we don't really talk about is with a franchise quarterback like Deshaun, a top tier quarterback like that, he makes the players around him better. Like Baker wasn't that type of quarterback. It's sort of like you needed the weapons around him to make him kind of be the top tier quarterback. It's the other way around for Deshaun. He can make, because if you look at his roster, besides Hopkins and the Texans, that he didn't really have much help, and he was very highly productive there. So. Yeah, it's an underrated thing with getting Deshaun. He kind of makes things. You don't have to be super, super highly talented on the outside. He can kind of throw people open, as they say.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
What was what would you guys say is your favorite pick in the draft of the ones the Browns got?
Well, as I said, I think Perrion Winfrey is the best pick. He was my top. He was a top 50 guy, and he fits a huge need for him. So I just thought that was a perfect fit and value and for the need. So I thought him Winfrey was the best.
Yeah, it seemed. What was the reason you think he slid so far?
He's a little bit lighter for a defensive lineman. And he was out of position for most of his career at Oklahoma. He played nose tackle for some reason. And he's very, very light, for nose tackle. He should have been a 3-technique, but, I think just overall, because the production is there, I think it's just because the interior defense line really, the class didn't really get taken off the board that quickly or that much at all. Because you saw two in the first round, and I think only one or two went in the second. So I can say, I think the whole class kind of got pushed down. I think the wide receiver class kind of pushed everybody down the board. Forget what the exact number was. It was like around 20 that won in the first two rounds, which is insane amount. Yeah.
Yeah. Considering there was only one quarterback taken in that same span.
Right. Which is also weird.
Yeah. Ethan, what about you? What was your favorite guy here?
So I've made it no secret that I'm a big David Bell guy, and getting him at 99, I think is a fantastic value. I mean, 6'2", 205, like you said, plays bigger than that size. You know, you got the sense that watching him at Purdue, he was like some 5'10", you know, small guy, but he's a lot bigger than he looks on the field and plays like it too. And this may be one of the deepest wide receiver drafts we see in a decade. Browns had no shot at getting any of the big three, and Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, or Jameson Williams. So, you know, I kind of had my hopes out for maybe a George Pickens. I have no faith in Treylon Burks, the kid from Arkansas. I think he went 18th to Tennessee, I want to say, yeah. Something like that.
AJ Brown replacement.
Yeah, I don't know if that's much.
AJ Brown at home.
Yeah, well, AJ Brown at home is looking a lot like not great. I didn't have a lot of faith in anybody like that. I think they potentially missed out on a guy like Mechie, who did really well at Alabama. But I think if, you know, that was your first crack at wide receiver that you chose to take a stab at as a NFL franchise, I think that was pretty good at 99 and this deep of a draft class.
Yeah. I think my favorite pick, and, you know, there's going to be some football purists, and maybe you guys think that it was probably an overdraft, but I think getting a kicker that you really like at that point in the draft, even though it's the fourth round, and that's sacrilegious to some, I think if he pans out, he's probably well worth even beyond that, because kickers, if you can have a kicker for 10 years, that's just a part of your game you don't have to worry about. And I think one of the more underrated parts of the analytical approach is that I imagine they value kickers more than even we think they do, because you realize how many games are won and lost by an extra point here or a missed field goal there. So if Cade York pans out, you have a guy that you're going to have for a long time. What do you think, Joe? What did you think about drafting a kicker at that point?
Yeah, I thought it was. I think if it wasn't you, it would have been somebody in the fourth round. That seemed like the range of. I think you saw three other punters go in the third round or fourth round. So I thought it was the right spot for him. Daniel Jeremiah actually had him in his top 150, and he said that's the first time he's ever had a kicker in there in I think the last 10 years or so. So it just shows you the kind of talent that Cade York has. And it's sort of the Browns, you know, like the young guy, like picking young guys because they like guys that have produced at a young age. And Cade York actually fits that perfectly. He came in, played right away at 18, and he's only 21, and he played all 3 years at LSU. And obviously he's made so many big kicks there. So I think the time of it and then the player that they pick was the right solution, because they couldn't go with Chase McLaughlin for the second straight year. They kept punting the kicker position down the road. It just seemed like they kept kind of getting, oh, maybe this guy will work, maybe this guy will work. And that's just not the way to go anymore. You gotta, as you see, just two of our biggest rivals, Cincinnati Bengals and the Baltimore Ravens, they have two elite kickers, and it just shows you how much easier the game is with those guys. Like Baltimore, if you get over the 40-yard line, it's three points.
Field goal range, yeah.
Right, it's 3 points.
I don't think the Browns were in field goal range last year until – you didn't feel safe until, like, they were at the 20.
Right.
I didn't even feel kicking safe then.
Right. especially late in the season, he was just
anything 35 and beyond, you were kind of iffy on, and that's not where you should be as an NFL team.
No,
where's Ocho Cinco?
Yeah, right. Seriously, he would have been a better option over the past few years.
Yeah. So I think that's where the value of drafting him is. It gives your offense a little bit more leeway to. Right. Operate because you don't have to go for it on fourth and five from the 33 anymore. You have a kicker that made 15 field goals from beyond 50 yards in college, which college kickers are a meme for a reason. So.
right. Yeah. And that's one of those things too, is the Browns fans, especially last year, were kind of really, really strict, kind of mad about going for all those fourth downs. A lot of the reason was because they just didn't have a trusty kicker that could kind of go for it and kind of make those situations. Obviously, there's the analytics of it. You always kind of lean towards going a short fourth and short, but in some of the situations, it seemed like just kicking a field goal would have been a better option. And that's one reason why this pick is kind of a good one. They can have a trusty one there.
Joe, I think it was you in our private side Discord that shared the article that LSU wouldn't let Cade handle kickoff duties because it was like 10 rows deep into the stands every time. Yeah. So if anybody needs any testament to Cade York's leg strength,
right,
they wouldn't let him kick an LSU
because it was too many guaranteed balls.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guarantee he'll be doing that in the NFL. I think the reason, because they have different kind of kickoff rules in college. You kind of, because you can fair catch now in the, I think in front of the 20. So I think they kind of wanted it a little bit shorter kicks, but yeah, in the NFL, you kick it out of the end zone. Like yeah. just watch Justin Tuck every freaking time. He'll kick it out of the end zone. So it's going to be nice to have a guy that can do that.
Yeah. The Browns definitely had their fair share of special teams coverage issues last season too. So a guy who's going to reliably not allow a return is also pretty welcome.
Right. Yeah. Yes, definitely.
And props to the Browns, who are trying to be a respected team, that they went out this offseason and fixed with their weakest link, which was their special teams. They got a punter that's really good, and maybe not really good, but good.
Reliable.
They got a kicker that you hope to have for the next 10 to 15 years, and you got a return man that actually is a return man and not a designated fair catcher.
Right. Or a guy that thinks he's not, and he can just loses 5 yards or whatever. But yeah. It's nice that they kind of have been ignoring it a little bit over the past few years. So it was nice that they kind of went all in on getting those positions fixed.
Yeah. They got to a point in their we have to win now point where they realized, shit, we got to actually focus on this. We can't lose games like this anymore.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
I wonder if going forward that if some of these more analytical driven teams are going to value kickers like that in the draft, if there is a kicker that is that good, if you're going to have that kind of draft value on kickers, or if it was just a product of this draft being so mid round heavy.
Yeah. I think it's because I kind of listened to some of the analytics of like PFF. They had a draft show. They weren't too high on it. so it kind of gives you a little back and forth on the analytics side. I think it's just kind of value of the player, which is kind of one of the best ones to come out in a while. And just a big, big need that the Browns had. So it'll be interesting to see if it's actually a trend or if it's just kind of a one-off.
Yeah. Obviously, if Cade York makes the team, he's going to have the most impact of any of the rookies. But other than him, who do you guys think is going to have the most impact this season?
I would say probably, as I've been talking about, Perrion. I think he's probably going to be in the rotation just based on his talent, but also just on what they have there. They have Elliott, and then they have Togiai, and then not much else right now, because they didn't sign either of the Malik's back, and so they're kind of short staffed there. So I think just based on kind of need, he'll be in there. So I would probably say him.
Yeah, you, Ethan.
I really want to believe in this Alex Wright kid from UAB, just because his position, and if something happens to the Jet, to hopefully they resign him, but it seems like a foregone conclusion at this point to a lot of people in the industry. But if something happens to Jadeveon, it feels like anybody
or Miles.
Miles is going to benefit, or Miles for that, for the sake of argument, because he has had some ankle injuries and some issues in his time in the league. But really want to believe in the big 6'4", 275-pound opposite defensive end from UAB, mostly just because I want to root for a dragon. But, you know... It's one of those things where, like, until they get a big splashy free agency to really shore up the defensive line, then he seems like one of those guys that could step in and have a bigger impact than, you know, Porter Gustin or any of the other defensive ends they've shuffled in and out.
Yeah.
I actually, and whether or not he actually sees the field as much, you know, given the the injury history of our defensive backs, I actually kind of like Emerson to make an impact this year. I think he's going to fill nicely into the MJ Stort-sized hole that was vacated this offseason. I think having that kind of physical presence in the defensive backfield is important, because he, especially towards the end of the season, it seemed like MJ Stort was one of the primary tacklers almost for the Browns defense. He was making a lot of nice plays, and you know, he went out and got paid because of that. So having kind of a bigger bodied defensive back, which I think Emerson is almost going to be a fast linebacker in a sense, because I don't think there's necessarily a place for him in the starting rotation. I think all of that is set, but in nickel and dime packages, I think you see him come in as a faster linebacker type that can both cover, stop the run and cover tight ends if you need him to. So yeah. I think there's some value there, and I would imagine that he's going to have some impact on games this year.
Yeah, just the Browns love to have versatility in the secondary, and overall, like Newsom, Ward, Greedy, they're not the biggest guys. So getting a kind of different type of quarterback out there it'll be kind of nice to add to the room. They're really not that big in that room, so getting a guy that's long like him would be it's a nice option for him.
Maybe we'll cover tight ends now.
Maybe. Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed.
If they only block.
Fingers crossed.
I think one of the biggest surprises of the Browns draft is that they drafted all these guys.
Right, yeah.
Historically, you don't see teams that are in win now mode make, what, 9 draft picks? Because there's just not necessarily the roster space for 9 rookies, because you want to have experienced guys running out there. Were you surprised that they made all those picks in the end?
Yeah, I was. We haven't picked 9 guys in quite a while, I think. But yeah, it was kind of surprising. I think the Browns are actually in a position where you're going to see probably a couple of them might not make the roster. You kind of see this happen on some of the good teams, that some of their guys, they just don't have enough room. So I think they just wanted to get a lot of new bodies in with the higher kind of guys, higher price guys on the team now, Watson, Ward, Miles, and all that. They're going to have to kind of fill the bottom of the roster with these young guys. So I can definitely see that happening more often now.
Yeah.
Just so they can have more options to kind of fill in the bottom of the roster without getting all these kind of veterans to fill in.
I think the last place to go for the Browns draft is what would you think as an overall grade for what they did over the weekend?
I'm not a really guy that gives grades, but I would say it's like a B. They're kind of hamstrung, obviously, with what they were given, in terms of just like the selections of where they were, but overall what they had, I thought they did well. I agree with Ethan, kind of didn't really like the trade down as much. I understood it. I like the trade, or like the value of what they got in picks wise, but I wish they would have gotten maybe one of those kind of receivers that they could have put into the lineup and kind of been able to produce right away. David Bell may be the guy. We don't know. We'll see. But there are just some guys that I really liked at that position. But overall, besides that decision, I really like the rest of the draft. I thought they filled some needs. They got receivers. They got some defensive linemen. They got a kicker finally. So I thought overall it was a good draft.
Yeah, I think for me it was not exactly a draft that you plaster all over a billboard and say, oh my God, look at all these guys we got. It's so sexy. We have all these great players. No, I think these are guys that are going to make an impact, but it's not going to be a major impact. Like, you're going to see guys that play spot duty and our depth, and I think that's fine. I think the trade was definitely confusing. I would rather have not seen them drop 24 spots out of the second round entirely, like pick someone in the second round, try to get into the second round, but it didn't work out that way. And I think they still ended up getting players that they wanted. I think the fact that a lot of mocks had them getting Perrion Winfrey at 44 and they got him at 108 or 108. Yeah. Like that's pretty crazy. So yeah, I think I'm right with you on a B. I think it's nothing that you're going to shout to the rooftops, but it's not a bad draft.
Right.
What do you think, Ethan?
I would give them a C plus simply because I think what they missed out on in value between 44 and where they eventually took a corner was too much to pass on. Whether you got, like Joe said, that plug and play wide receiver, not that I'm against David Bell by any stretch, but you also missed out on guys like David Ojabo, who went to a division rival, who could have been a great pair to Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, or could have even been potentially like a defensive end, outside linebacker hybrid kind of guy who could have made a huge impact as well. So simply for that, I kind of have to give it a C plus, and not understanding, you know, obviously right now the Mike Ford pick, not that I don't believe in Mike Ford. I was a big believer in that Cincinnati Cinderella run, but that kind of pick and not the cornerback still confuse me. Like, I'm still processing all of that.
Yeah, that's one of those things that I think we'll see in the preseason. Like, when these guys get on the field, see in a uniform, we'll see it. And, you know, I am still living under the impression that Jerome Ford is a replacement for D'Ernest Johnson. I don't think he's going to be on the roster.
Jerome Ford. I'm sorry. Mike Ford. I've been saying Mike Ford this whole time. Jesus. My God.
Didn't want to correct you.
Well, you should have. Now I look like an ass.
But I think he's going to be a depth guy. I want to see what he brings in terms of the running back room. I think I don't know what he is, and like, I didn't really watch a whole lot of Cincinnati, so I don't know what he brings. But you know, with D'Ernest Johnson and Kareem Hunt both potentially coming off the books in the next 12 months, drafting a running back now isn't necessarily a bad thing because you're not rushing to get someone up to speed next offseason.
Pit Pass Moto, sponsored by Moto America, is the show that keeps you up to speed on the latest in motorcycling and brings the biggest names in motorcycle racing right to you. From candid interviews with the top names in racing to providing insights into the trends and trendsetters driving the motorcycle industry, we have you covered. New episodes are available every Thursday at pitpassmoto.com and on your favorite podcast app. Ride on.
But Ethan mentioned Ojabo, who, you know, I do like. He's probably going to miss most of the season, but he did. Who did he end up going to? The Ravens. Yeah. Naturally.
Baltimore got a lot of guys. I was like, oh my God, I hate them.
Segueing to our next topic beautifully there, Taylor.
Yeah, I'm getting better at those. Do you think that the Ravens had the best draft of anyone in the AFC North?
I would say so. Yeah, just based on they got some good ones.
Seemed like they were just they were more vultures than Ravens. They were picking up the scraps of
right,
of everyone that was getting passed over, and they were like, "Oh, this is nice. Ooh, right. Piece of candy. Ooh, right. Piece of candy." Like, they're just all these guys that are getting passed over. They're like, you know what? I'll take that.
Right. Yeah. They were in so many positions where, like, just guys were kind of falling down the board. I'm looking at their picks now. That it's like they got guys that were some of the top guys in the draft, and it just kind of felt. I kept tweeting during the thing. I just hate them. Like, they're so good at drafting. Like, they're like.
This is an annual problem.
Man. Right. Every year, it's just the same thing. Oh, here's Baltimore getting somebody, especially on defense. They kind of really pick well on
Patrick Queen a year or two ago. It was J.K. Dobbins the year before for me. I mean, Yeah, it's always somebody that they're just.
I don't particularly know what they're doing offensively. I don't know who they have to catch passes aside from tight ends. They might just be running three tight end, two running back sets the entire season.
But and that's what you just hit on right there, because they took two interior offensive linemen, Linderbaum, a center, and another guy from Minnesota. But, you know, is all of that.
Are they adopting the wing T?
they did. I did hear that they're going back to more three tight end looks, which, okay. But, yeah,
I can't name another Ravens tight end besides Mark Andrews.
They drafted two.
They drafted two. Yeah, they did.
I can't name those guys.
I can't either, but I know they drafted two in the same round.
Right. Yeah, that's like kind of the thing that's kind of giving me hope a little bit. Like, I love their draft, but they really didn't address the wide receiver position. It's a dumpster fire, quite frankly. Like, it makes the Browns receiver core kind of look really good. Like, we have Amari Cooper as their number one. They have nobody. They have Bateman, who I guess they're going to kind of lean heavily on. Did we
see anything out of him last year that makes us a little bit afraid? I know he missed like six games or so.
Right. He missed like six games or so. But he really – he kind of made some spurts and all that, but it wasn't anything to like, oh, I'm going to lie. I'm going to put him as my number one. And
I'm going to trade Hollywood Brown for this guy.
I mean, it's not to say that they don't have offensive weapons. It's just that their entire game is going to be played within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like, your best receiver by far is Andrews. And
then J.K. Dobbins, who's a running back. And
he's probably their second best receiver.
So this poses an interesting thought exercise then, because obviously the Ravens collapsed when Lamar went out last year, and Tyler Huntley did okay. Stepping in, you know, he put up some decent numbers, but didn't win any games down the stretch to get them into the playoffs. Does adding two interior offensive linemen and knowing that their offensive coordinator still wants to use Lamar as a pocket passer before a rusher, does that do anything for that offense? Or are they going to sputter as much as they did last year, despite having more protection for Lamar? He's still not an accurate thrower.
I feel like almost this draft is an indication that they might be scrapping the whole Lamar as a passer kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Because if you look at the previous year, they kind of, it was more to that three tight end look kind of run. I think they had so many injuries preseason wise. They lost Dobbins early. I think they set
a world record for most Achilles torn in the first, in a 2 day span. Yeah.
Right. I just think it kind of threw a wrench in it, and they kind of tried to see if he could be the passer, and I think they kind of quickly figured out he is not the pocket passer. You gotta put it towards him, kind of do the three tight end look and all kind of short passes and all that. So I think they'll probably lean towards, especially with the personnel, I'm guessing they'll probably go towards that. But it'd be interesting because teams are getting better at kind of figuring these things out, like the play action pass rollouts. They defenses kind of figure that out last year. That's why half the reason Baker couldn't do anything.
He couldn't roll left to save his life because he couldn't turn his body.
Right.
He didn't have a left.
The left side of his body was dead.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how they go.
I feel like the Steelers had a very Steelers draft. We can get to Pickett in a moment, but I think they drafted receivers that are stereotypical Steelers guys. They drafted some defensive players that are stereotypical receivers or Steelers guys. But I think that whole draft is going to depend on whether or not Kenny Pickett is worth a damn.
Captain Small Hands.
I don't know how to evaluate it because I was team punt the Panthers to the sun if they drafted him at six, but I think they also could have gotten him two rounds later based on everything else.
Based on what we saw.
It's really funny that you say that too, because the Steelers, like, the Bengals had a very mediocre draft, in my opinion, but they won it in free agency, cementing their offensive line the way that they did. And they're going to be an absolute monstrosity next year.
I don't think the Bengals needed to have a great draft. I think they just needed to not have a dumpster fire draft.
No, they did everything right in free agency after the Super Bowl to cement themselves. But the Steelers, their very blatant problem last year was offensive line. And like the Bengals the year before them, they did nothing to solidify that. They did nothing to help out their new stud running back, who can do it all like Le'Veon Bell did for them. But now you have Kenny Pickett and a wide receiver. Kenny Pickett's going to be roadkill if you throw him out there with nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't like the Pickett pick. There you go. See that?
Yeah, finally, we did it.
We've come full circle now.
Yeah, I didn't like that. I didn't think any of them. I didn't think he was a first round guy. I thought Willis was better, and I thought he would have been a better pick. I still don't think they should have went quarterback. As you can see, no one took a quarterback until the third round. So I think they could have got him in the second round. Either of them, we'll see. But yeah, it's just I just don't think they have enough guys around them to kind of put them in there, and I think they'll probably lean on Trubisky, maybe kind of throw him to the fire. But
do you want to waste a year of Pickett? I mean, Pickett's what, 24 or 23?
Right. Yeah. It's that's why I love the pick as a Browns fan. I love
because I would have been absolutely scared out of my mind if they drafted Willis, to be honest, because he's one of those high ceiling guys that would work for them.
Right.
Even just if like he Lamar, doesn't work anywhere else, he would have worked.
We've also seen Lamar shred us for the last couple of years. Yeah.
Right.
That's a whole nother nightmare scenario. But
right.
Yeah.
To be fair, Lamar didn't shred us for the five quarters he played against us this year.
That's true.
Well, he didn't have to take an emergency dookie this year. That was the thing.
Yeah, it's I think some of the teams are actually banking on is just next year's quarterback class is supposed to be, which I think it will be, one of the best ones in quite a while. You got the Ohio State kid Stroud, and you got Alabama guy Young, and there's a couple other guys, and just kind of picking a kind of a guy this year will kind of miss out on next year. And I just don't think it was worth the pick there. And just as a Browns fan, I like it because it's kind of they're clearly the worst team in the division in terms of what I think.
I kind of hope they're stuck in quarterback purgatory for a while now.
Right. They deserve it.
It would be nice.
They deserve it.
I do love that. It's Matt Canada said they wanted a more mobile. Two guys they went out and got were Mitch Trubisky and he of the fake slide, Kenny Pickett.
I know. Right. I was like, okay, that's definitely going to be Willis. So then they go with Pickett. Pickett's a good, a solid athlete, but it's just weird. I don't know what Pittsburgh's doing, quite frankly, but they'll probably because they have Tomlin, they'll probably figure out how to win seven games or something like that.
Tomlin and Harbaugh, man, they're like cockroaches.
He's got to figure out how to win nine games to keep his streak going.
That would be hard. I don't see that happening, but we'll see.
Yeah, I can't imagine that's going to happen. To be honest, I don't know where Trubisky's Vegas is going to put their over under for them. But
yeah, I mean they have no offensive line, and Trubisky's still allergic to the left half of the field, so. What are you going to do unless every play is a play action roll out to the right with a wide open wide receiver?
I mean, we saw last year what happens when you play with a quarterback with zero arm strength. You throw the ball 2 yards upfield and hope for the best.
Yeah. Hey, man, he had several games where he was 50 of 70 for 100 yards. He did pretty damn good.
Collapses.
Yeah. So since we're kind of on the topic, I think the most enduring story of this draft is going to end up being what happened to the quarterbacks. I don't think we've ever seen this kind of draft where, well, maybe in 2013, that was kind of the comparison point, but you know, you had guys that were up until the last few days before the draft, people thought Willis might go in the top 10. People thought that Pickett might go in the top 10. And then all of a sudden you're getting past all these teams that need quarterbacks. And you're like, well, now what? And Pickett goes at 20, and then we don't see Willis until what? When did he end up going? And Desmond Ridder, I think, went before him. And Ridder went before him, didn't he?
Yeah, Ridder did go before him to Atlanta, which is crazy.
So what do you think was the reason that the general draft populace kind of missed so badly on these quarterbacks in terms of laying out their value?
So I think it was kind of a few things. So I think everyone knew this class was not very good. There was no one that I knew that I respected that was kind of high on these draft. Like, there's like a lot of potential with Willis, but like overall it wasn't, no one really liked it. And it was more people just, okay, someone's got to take a quarterback. There's all these needy teams that need this quarterback, but I think teams just figured out, like, it's just not worth it, except for Pittsburgh, which was nice. But it just wasn't worth it. And just based on that talent and then the talent next year, I think it was just kind of a culmination of all that and just not making any sense of wasting a draft pick when you know your evaluations, you know that they're just, it's just not worth it and they're not good enough.
Yeah, I wonder if this is going to be like almost a turning point for the league into not overdrafting quarterbacks. Like, no one took the bait this year. Ethan's shaking his head. But, you know, I wonder if people are just not going to take the bait anymore and draft guys that should be going in the second and third round at 14.
Yeah, I don't think that's ever going to be a thing, man. To me, this is all pretty standard. You know, teams are pumping up their sources to try and throw some smoke on the trail. And ESPN's obviously going to keep pumping quarterbacks because that's what moves the needle on their ratings. So it didn't matter that it was a weak class. Of course, that's all they were going to talk about. Nobody's going to talk about Perrion Winfrey being a steal at 108. They're going to talk about how Kenny Pickett was taken at 20. If he doesn't produce, then that's Kenny Pickett's fault. Or, you know, Desmond Ridder might be the most productive quarterback in this class with Atlanta. It's going to be one of those weird years where it was just a weak draft class, but people had to keep the position relevant because that's what moves the needle.
Yeah.
They had to be taken because the position has to be filled on the field.
right. I think the veteran kind of quarterbacks out there too could be something. Like, they maybe didn't want to allude to it right now, like both Jimmy Garoppolo and Baker Mayfield.
They're just kind of floating in the ether,
right?
Waiting for a team.
That might be something that those teams kind of have in the back of their mind. They don't want to do it right now, kind of that right now. So maybe that's something else they actually had in their mind.
I will say, in defense of the quarterback class this year, I did see a tweet when the Patriots took Bailey Zapp in the draft this year. Somebody had said he looks like a thicker Case Keenum, and the first comment on the tweet was Queso Keenum, and I want that nickname to stick so bad.
Oh, that is great.
Nice.
So he is my current favorite future Mac Jones backup quarterback, Queso Keenum, aka Bailey Zapp.
That is great. Oh, man.
Okay. We can also start the rumor that Kenny Pickett has to eat off the Permane Brothers kids menu because he can't fit the sandwiches in his hand.
How many posters at Browns games and Ravens games are there going to be that, you know, that picture with the guys holding that burger in small hands? That's going to be plastered all over.
There's going to be an entire group of Browns fans that show up to the Muni lot dressed up as the SNL sketch where it's Kristen Wiig with the tiny doll hands just trying to hold a beer and drink it, and they're just going to be wearing picket jerseys, and that's going to be great.
Great.
I can't wait. Okay. Well, I think we're approaching an hour, and I think we've covered about everything that we can. Obviously, I think, Joe, this is where I'd give you a chance to plug what you're doing in the next few weeks, but I think you're going to go on a nice sabbatical and not think about football for a little while.
Yeah, a little bit. I'll probably have something this week. I have another podcast tomorrow with Josh, and then I'll do a kind of breakdown of just how I thought the class is. And then, yeah, kind of go on a little break, and then we're almost back to football season. So,
yeah, I mean, you got, what, 2 months, and then we're talking about preseason.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, actually, you got about 11 days, and then we have to do the schedule game. So.
Right, yeah, so I'll be back for that, and then, I know, football season seems like it never ends.
Football never ends.
The NFL is king of making a product that lasts 20 weeks, a year-round right. spectacle.
That's right. They have a freaking show for the schedule release.
It's funny. My fiance will come into me, come into the room and see me watching various sporting events, NFL related or not, and she was like, "Do sports ever end? Do we ever have just a break?" And as I'm sitting watching a NASCAR race in the middle of March, nope.
That was the weird thing during the pandemic when there was like days, it was weeks and weeks without anything. It was just a weird time.
Time didn't exist. There was no sports.
Like, what am I supposed to watch?
What do I do with my hands?
I guess I'll watch The Office again.
Right. I literally watched The Office.
What did I watch during the pandemic? I don't even remember what I watched during the pandemic.
I literally watched like a movie a day, I think.
Like, see, that was a good time to catch up on that.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
I had my fiance watch all 20 whatever MCU movies during that time span.
We did that too.
And now she has an entire wall dedicated to WandaVision. So, but since we have completely diverted off the topic, I think this is a good place to wrap up. Thanks for coming on, Joe. I'm sure once we get into actual football grievances come this season, we'll have you on, and you get to rant on whatever is eating you about the Browns that particular week.
Yeah, I'll be glad to.
Ethan, you want to take 20 seconds to congratulate Franmil Reyes for actually hitting a baseball today?
I would love to, but it didn't necessarily break a slump because he struck out immediately afterwards. Yeah, so we'll talk about that more on the WFNY Cornercast later this week, about how we went from losing 7 straight to sweeping the Oakland Athletics. Not that that's a crowning achievement or anything, but
if you sleep the Athletics and 17 people watch it, did you actually sleep the Athletics?
I don't know if we necessarily slept them or if we ethered them after that first game.
This is the weirdest season ever, man. They just keep sweeping or get swept.
That is true, but I will say I'm very disappointed. They won 3 games in Oakland, and I didn't see a single one of those damn feral cats that's allegedly loose in that Coliseum.
That's true. Oh, my God.
Are there more feral cats in the stadium than people, maybe?
There probably were at some point during this series, yes.
Probably, yes.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming on, Joe, Ethan.
Yeah, no problem.
I'll probably text you in 20 minutes.
We're going to be talking about these feral cats. That's what we're going to be doing.
if you've made it this far, once again, hi, Mom. This has been The Grievance Room, episode 10, and we'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.
Hello, and welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to 2 readers about 1 book. And together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our 9th season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.